Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Five, four, three, two, one. Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producers are Patrick Antonetti and Bob Tabador. This week, I mean, talk about two big guests. The download should be really off the charts here. Jimmy Traina is the host of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. He also writes, what is the name of it? It's Traina Thoughts now, Jimmy, right? It's not Hot Clicks anymore?
Correct.
It's a little shtick there. Yes. And Chad Finn, of course, is the sports media writer for the Boston Globe and Boston.com, but he also covers the Red Sox and Patriots and all those other teams in that area. Chad, welcome back. It's been a while.
I don't even know if that intro was sarcastic. I'm taking a little.
For you or
the
or
downloads
for
will be off
the
charts.
I feel very confident about this one. I feel we're going to do good. all right. Well, let's get to it, by the way. By the way, usually I do these intros prior to bringing the guests on, but today I just rolled, Jimmy. I went first take, on this.
Yeah, but you did a podcast blunder at the beginning because you did 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you're not supposed to say the one, so you could give the person who's editing a little time.
Yeah, good call. You're right about that. Don't edit this out, Patrick. Let my screw up be at the top. That's actually very. That's very fair, Jimmy.
I thought you were a pro, but
very fair.
Everyone's a producer.
All right, Chad. We're going to start with this. I know this is. This is a couple weeks old, but I want to start with you, Chad, just because this is a guy who obviously was a very prominent figure in your market. What did you make of ESPN and Paul Pierce parting ways? You want to call it a firing? You want to call it a parting of the ways? Call it what you want, but you know, Paul Pierce was on their most prominent NBA show. I guess The Jump could be too. No offense to The Jump, but then, you know, this is a major figure in their NBA on-air lineup, and now he's gone.
Yeah, his role had been reduced a little bit when they let Michelle Beadle go and Pearson Billups were demoted at the same time. I don't know if Paul saw the writing on the wall there. I reached out to him a couple of times, but I don't know if the party's still going on or what, but he hasn't talked about it. But I do think he had a sense that the job wasn't quite what he expected it to be, and it wasn't going the way he expected it to. And so, you know, he made $148 million in his NBA career, presumably is a pretty good chunk of that left. He may also have some outside options beyond this and just decided he didn't really care if this ended right now. I think what ultimately did him in and made them decide to fire him, and I thought they would do it sooner than they actually did. That was a Friday night, and they did it. News broke on it Monday evening, if I remember right. Rachel Nichols' name was mentioned in the comments on there. Not really crudely, but that's the kind of thing you see and makes you cringe. Pierce didn't respond to it, but it just emphasizes the, what women in the business have to deal with. It's certainly not something Disney wants to, have to address or acknowledge. And so, I know you guys dealt with this too. ESPN didn't even comment on it. They didn't say anything about it other than, I think, probably confirming on background to some people that he wasn't going to be working for them anymore. And, I don't think Paul was surprised and frankly brought it on himself.
All right. So a couple of things here, Jimmy, because I know if I remember reading your column, you have a different take on this. You thought it was an overreach by ESPN. Unquestionably, like Rachel Nichols' name being in there is just totally bullshit. You know, I would have liked for Pierce to say something, but You know, he didn't. Here's the sort of thing that's interesting to me, Jimmy, because I'm not a moralist on this stuff, and you know, adults can do what they want. But sort of here's the but, though. The but is Paul Pierce doesn't know he works for Disney, right? Like he has to know somewhere that he's not working for a company that has different kind of corporate standards. So, like, while he has every right sort of to film like any kind of IG session he wants with, you know, partying basically, like somewhere in the back of his mind, he has to know that like he does work for Disney. So I know that you, I think you thought it was an overreach by ESPN, and I'm one who, you know, almost never sort of calls for firings. I mean, like, I know, you know, people know how I feel about Skip Bayless. I've never said Fox should fire him. But I guess what I would say to you, Jimmy, and I'd be curious sort of your feedback on this, like, no matter what, like, Paul Pierce does know who his employer is, and he's not working for, you know, Rebel Radio here. He's working for the Walt Disney World, who, you know, has theme parks that are trying to cater to, like, seven-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's absolutely no question that what he did was beyond stupid, and I think he absolutely deserved a suspension. I have this personal thing where I hate when it automatically goes to a firing when a crime hasn't been committed. He didn't hurt anyone else in the process of what he was doing. Yes, it is incredibly stupid to go grab your phone and put that on Instagram. There's no doubt about it. I just, you know, it's a first time offense, at least publicly, that we know about. Suspend them for a couple of weeks, I thought would have been the more reasonable action to take. Obviously, though, and this is really what I wanted to get at when I wrote about it, but I'm not a good writer, so maybe it didn't come across. If that's, you know, Stephen A., Kirk Herbstreit, whoever, they're not getting fired. He got fired because he wasn't really good at his job. That was a big factor in this.
It's true.
So, you know, some dope on Twitter replied, like, anyone at ESPN would get fired if they did that. That's just
not true.
Not true at all. So,
yeah. Well, that's what, let me, I'm glad you brought that up, Jimmy. So yeah. Let me go back to you, Chad. You know, both of us sort of have to live with this every day in terms of covering these guys. I think Train is absolutely correct. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that if Paul Pierce was a difference maker on that show, and again, there's only one Charles Barkley, but let's sort of just play this out. If Paul Pierce was ESPN's Charles Barkley, or had that kind of sort of impact on a broadcast, he absolutely would have been given a suspension. Disney, I think, would have tried to figure out a way to say, you know, this is not the kind of thing we want to see from our employees. We've talked to Paul. He's not going to do it again. He's not going to be on the air for the next 3 weeks, but he's suspended. Do you agree with that? I you know, whether it's Stephen A. or a Kirk Herbstreit or... You know, I'm trying to even think of sort of who at this point are sort of the untouchable. Mike Greenberg is certainly an untouchable at ESPN, but guy's going to be running the network soon. I think any of the quote-unquote untouchables at ESPN would have gotten suspended. The difference is Jimmy's right. Paul Pierce doesn't move the needle.
I'm just picturing what Greeny's version of that video would look like. I don't know if it would be the same as Pierce's. But I'll give you an example on their depth chart over there. Paul Pierce's teammate with the Celtics, Kendrick Perkins, who's star has ascended. He's still not a polished TV presence by any stretch, but he's one who speaks his truth. He's really honest about guys he played with and gets him in trouble sometimes. Got him in
KD. Yes.
Yeah. Jason Tatum recently saying Tatum just wasn't playing hard and Tatum called him up. He does work for NBC Sports Boston up here as well. He's ascended. He's somebody that ESPN promotes, and Pierce's status there has really been on the decline, and I just don't think he cared that much about it. You know, he wasn't one of those great players who put in a ton of work in the, you know, their post-career job to master that the way they did the sport during their playing days. And, you know, you can't say it's mutual because he did something that cost him his job, but I would be surprised if he had any regret or remorse whatsoever about how it ended, other than the fact that, you know, he might have some family members mad at him.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is when you have that kind of money, as Paul Pierce does, I mean, you know, we're allowed to curse in this podcast. It's fuck you money, basically. And, you know, if he if he gets whacked by ESPN, nothing's going to change. The guy's got generational wealth. And I have no doubt if he actually wants to stick around in doing media stuff, he'll either get his own podcast or he'll join a place where, like, they're not going to blink if Paul Pierce is doing something like that. I want to stick on ESPN for a second because I want to talk to you guys about Alex Rodriguez, who happens to be in the news today. As we're taping this morning, he and Jennifer Lopez, co-issued a press release saying that they had broken up. We wish those two kids luck as they head forward in their future relationships.
Speak for yourself.
Thank you. So, Jimmy, like, here's one thing that's kind of interesting to me. You know, when I was sort of younger in the business, I guess I could sort of say, like, I think, like, these conflicts of interest bothered me a lot more. Like, if and maybe conflict of interest is not the perfect thing here, but if, like, you know, if the father of a broadcaster called, like, his or her daughter or son in a game, like, that used to sort of bother me more. But now, like, I think because, like, things like that, they're just sort of done so many times, like, stuff like that doesn't bother me. But I will say one thing that always did bother me when it and certainly in a sense still does when it came to Alex Rodriguez and ESPN and Fox to an extension, is if you're pursuing ownership of a Major League Baseball team, which Alex Rodriguez was, and in Jessica Mendoza's case, same thing. If you're working for a team in the league that you are talking about, you are not working for me as a viewer. You're working either A, for the league, B, for that team, but C, let's be honest, for yourself. And so I've always sort of, ever since Alex Rodriguez was an analyst for an ESPN Sunday night game, I've never taken a word that guy says about the league. Maybe seriously is not the wrong word, but, like, it's just irrelevant to me. I think I consider him a public relations apparatus of MLB. If he's talking about the X's and O's of a swing or something like that, I think I listen to him. I think he's an interesting broadcaster, but I can't take him seriously when he comes to sort of talking about larger issues in the game. I think he's an apologist for the league, but I don't know. Like, you know, so on the one hand, like, I'm okay with some conflict. And on the other hand, I'm, like, such a zealot for it. I sometimes feel a little bit like a hypocrite on that. So where do you stand on this, Jimmy? And I know, again, you have your own sort of feelings about Alex Rodriguez because you're a big, big Yankee fan. But how do you just sort of feel about that, having a guy who's been on the air who was for a long time, at least before the T-Wolves purchase, trying to basically buy a major league team?
I literally have no idea what your question is.
Really? All right, I'll go to chat.
Here's how I don't care about if he was trying to buy a team, because, listen, if you're going to put an ex-player in the booth, it's hard to take any of them. So they're always going to defend the players. There's not going to be a ton of objectivity there.
I think Alex Rodriguez defends the league more than the players, though, don't you?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he feels like he has to kiss the league's ass since they let him get all these jobs after he got suspended for a year. But my issue isn't the conflict of interest. My issue is it becoming a 4-hour Alex Rodriguez show.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I don't the conflict. Listen, if viewers understood how much conflict of interest there is out there, it's all out there because these guys working in the booth all have agents,
and they're players. Yeah, they're CAA. There's a CAA or WME guy, and the guy on the field is a CAA guy.
Right, and they use them for sort. You know, there are play by play people who use GMs or you know, managers as sources, and so it's all sort of what was the word you used? Conflicts of interest or whatever you want to call it. My issue is that on Sunday night, ESPN has zero interest in showing you the game. They want to give you 3 hours of A-Rod. And as I have said a million times, and I'll say it again, there is not one person in America who wants that.
Chad, you know, you work for the Boston Globe, so you certainly understand my question here. There are still, you know, there's a lot of people who still sort of, they're very hardcore, and I understand it, about the sort of the conflicts of interest. But Jimmy's certainly dead on. I mean, if you went through, I don't have an agent, by the way. I don't know if you or Jimmy do. But if you went through the people who are in our business at very high levels, particularly on television, and you sort of, you know, you went through, like, what agency they worked for or where they were represented, and then, you know, connected the people who are in their sport, who are part of the same agency, just a different part of that agency, I mean, you know, your head would spin. And so Jimmy's right in that, you know, in some sense, there's sort of conflicts everywhere, and you just got to hope for the objectivity of the reporter or the broadcaster. But me personally, like when Alex Rodriguez was pursuing the Mets, it just honestly felt absurd to me to have that guy in the air talking about baseball. But what's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, it was absurd to have Jessica Mendoza on when she was consultant to the Mets. She should have been nowhere near Mets broadcasts or New York broadcasts or maybe even NL East broadcasts. You're talking about the rivals of that team. But my thing with A-Rod is we've had all these stories as he landed the Fox gig and got some positive initial reaction about how he interacted in the studio. You know, they had that successful studio 4 or 5 years ago. And it began this redemption story for him. And, you know, a lot of features written about that. And I'm curious who the people are who like him, because I never hear from them. I maybe it's being in Boston, but
they're executives at Fox and ESPN.
Yeah. Right? It's not the people they're trying to get to tune in, though. I don't think, I want to know what the A-Rod demographic is. Maybe it's the people who are looking at his Instagram feed today and seeing him with Alex and Jen written in the sand with Coldplay playing over it. But other than that, I don't really know, other than he's super famous and relatively articulate. And
don't you think, especially in the case of Fox, they like the train wreck appeal of it?
Sure. It's Pete Rose too.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
But I actually think he's very good in the studio. I actually think
studio. Yes.
No, but
I think 4 hours of Alex Rodriguez is the issue, Jimmy. No. I don't think him in a panel, I think he's pretty good.
My point is before he got to the booth, his career was a train wreck.
But he's the opposite as an analyst, I think, both in the studio and in the game situation. If anything, you can call him too polished.
He says some goofy stuff though. I mean,
yeah, I guess
tactical things that make no sense.
Do you consider Alex Rodriguez like potentially sort of dangerous in a sense every time he's on air? I don't. I feel he's more vanilla. Barkley.
But that's the point. I mean, Chad mentioned Kendrick Perkins, and Kendrick Perkins not being polished as a viewer.
That's interesting. Yeah, he says things that are a little bit dangerous, which I like, Kendrick.
But he might drop an MF on you.
I'm not even thinking dangerous like that. I'm thinking dangerous in that it puts a show into situations where we don't expect, which I think is good TV.
I'm just saying, as a viewer, I am more drawn to and would rather watch someone not polished who's coming off as real than someone who's as polished at A-Rod and just comes off as probably the biggest phony you've ever seen on television.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, we're all in agreement here that the ESPN, Fox, a lot of, I mean, you know, this is not just those guys, CBS, NBC, they're very star driven. They become, Chad, you know this from both of us do from having talked to executives and seen this. They can become very enamored with celebrity, and they become very enamored. There's a reason why guys like Magic Johnson and others have been on the air, and you're never a good analyst, but they find value in name recognition because in theory you could sell that to media buyers. It's an easy way to market your product, and I think in Alex Rodriguez's case, you know, we're talking about one of the most famous players of the last 30 years, and I'm sure that was the thesis behind.
And you know why else
put him on? But he is not a good game analyst. Like, that's just being honest.
But you know what trumps being a good game analyst? We're just spent 20 minutes talking about him.
Well, there you go. So that this, which is what ESPN wants. I agree.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how much that translates to people actually tuning in to
watch
him.
No, it does not. But I think it gets Fox and ESPN excited, especially Fox, I think, more than ESPN. I think, I don't know. I mean, I would bet if you gave ESPN some truth serum, they probably would like to get out of the Alex Rodriguez business.
But I want to hear the stories when he is done there. What, from the PR people that deal with him, from the Phil Orleans and the behind the scenes people over there, whether it's as smooth sailing as they make it seem.
I have no doubt Alex probably is trying to, you know, he probably engineered as best he could to make it Alex Rodriguez solo analyst. But my sense is he's probably not a hard guy to work with for the behind the scenes people.
We're always told how much he likes baseball. I think that's the most authentic thing about him. Yeah. The rest is the question.
Yeah, if you talk to even the Yankees beat writers over the years, they would say he was a baseball geek and would go watch the package like late at night. I think that his love of the game is genuine. It's just all the shit around it always feels.
Well, he made sure like
he's sort of conducting a photo shoot of himself,
and he made sure to get ESPN to hire his own play-by-play guy.
That's correct. That was a package deal, and you know, I know a lot of people like Vasgersian. I don't necessarily dislike him. He just wouldn't be my choice. I think. Whether it's Jason Benetti or Boog Shambi, I mean, or even Carl Ravitch, they just had better guys than Vasgersian in-house. And I always thought they should have took one of those.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Chad, we'll do this quick because I don't think Jimmy cares about this at all. NHL package. You feel confident still that NBC is going to get the B package, or could we see a Fox or a Turner or someone else sort of sneak in here?
I figured it was going to be like a week or two. When was that? About mid-March, right? The ESPN stuff came down. And, you know, Bettman, when he talked to all of us on the conference calls, made it sound like it was still sort of up in the air and said some nice things about Fox. But you could also kind of read between the lines and realize they really don't want to lose that relationship that NBC and even going back to the Outdoor Life Network and Versus days has been really accommodating partner for them. And I don't think they want to kind of leave them at the altar, but you know, we don't really know how NBC feels about being the number two package and all the commitment they've made to the NHL. And then all of a sudden, you know, we've got ESPN back in power, like it never left.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I feel like Fox would be the late player to come in, but then the question would be, can they fit that into their inventory? I think hockey's a good sport, though, to have a foothold in, Chad. The demos are young. It puts you into some interesting markets, and Seattle's coming, which I think will be a great TV market. But, yeah, I'm with you. If you're NBC, you're like, we've just carried this sport for how long? We've put so many millions of dollars into it, and now, a new leading man comes on and the NHL goes with that. So I get it. I still think NBC is going to eventually at the end of the day get this, but I'm with you. I am stunned that we have not had a signing yet. Do you guys want to do anything quick on the regional sports channels and YouTube and Sinclair and all the issues that so many baseball fans have around the country not getting games that they would like? Chad, before I go back to Jimmy, Chad, you've done a lot on this, I think, right?
Yeah, because YouTube dropped Nesson back before, I guess it was back in November, which carries the Bruins and Red Sox up here. And so I've constantly had to rewrite essentially the same story saying nothing is happening. YouTube dropped them because Nesson charges way too much per subscriber and wants to be on, all the top end tiers. And it's just not really worth it to YouTube TV, which has a huge following now, to do that. Last I looked, it was over 3 million subscribers that they had. And they dropped 20 RCNs before they even dropped Nesson. So the writing was kind of on the wall there. But with baseball season starting up here, we're through a whole new cycle of what am I going to do? I can't watch the Red Sox. I have YouTube TV, and naturally they blame the network, and some of it is their fault. But for the most part, it's just YouTube TV deciding the RSN business at the rates they're charging isn't worthwhile to them anymore.
Jimmy, you have any thoughts on this?
It's funny because a friend of mine frantically was texting me on opening day, freaking out because he had Hulu TV. And they dropped the Yes Network.
Yeah.
And then someone else told me that YouTube TV had also dropped Yes Network. And, you know, he was asking me, like, what's going on? And I'm like, you know, no offense, but you know, cut the shit and get cable. And
but you old guy doesn't want young guys to cut the cord.
Well, I mean, listen, I understand it's a streaming world and everything's changing. And you mentioned hockey, and if you're a hockey fan, you better have ESPN Plus, or you're going to be, you know, basically out of luck in a big way. But you're going to rely on them. There's going to be issues. You know, in all of my years on this earth, I think YES got dropped from the cable system 1 year or something like that.
So right.
And you know, I didn't realize it was as deep as what Chad was saying with 20 RSNs getting off YouTube TV and Hulu TV. It doesn't happen with cable. So,
but it's caught. But the issue, Jimmy, as you know, in a lot of these markets is it's costly. Right?
Yeah, but you got to pay
three figures monthly, and the likelihood is you're using like seven channels.
Well, I don't want to get into the weeds on this because I don't know enough about it. But my friend who had this frantic experience trying to get the Yankees told me that like his Hulu, he signed up for Hulu TV because it was like, I don't know, 40 or 50 bucks a month. And then it got raised to like 70 or 80 a month.
Yeah.
So at that point, you might as well just suck it up and get cable. I mean,
well, that's how YouTube TV wrote people in. It was 35 bucks a month when we subscribed. It's up to 60 now. And wow.
That's what I'm saying.
We had the other option for Nesson. It's AT&T, which nobody really even knows about. And Fubo, which is now $69.99 a month. And they added, after YouTube TV dropped Nesson, they added a $5 sports channel fee to the monthly bill. So that you guys know this. I mean, you're either paying a $150, $200 cable bill, or you're going to have to make some really serious decisions about what you want. Fubo doesn't have Turner. If you're a Boston sports fan, you get, Nesson, you get Fubo to watch the Red Sox and Bruins. You miss the NCAA tournament and you're missing the NBA stuff right now. Everybody is just going to have to sit down and do their homework and prioritize things. And it sucks for the viewer, but the NHL example was the biggest confirmation of this with as Jimmy mentioned, the 75 exclusive games on ESPN Plus. Wait until Nesson fans realize the Bruins games are going to be on a subscription service they don't have.
Well, the reality is, like, and both of you guys know this, like, take for instance soccer. If you're a soccer fan who really like wants to watch soccer globally, the cost that you are now going to have to sort of shell out between ESPN Plus, you know, Paramount Plus, and then sort of, you know, figure whatever other streaming service might have, like whatever league you want. It's very pricey. I understand, and it sort of gets back to what Jimmy's saying. We'll just get cable. Well, Jimmy, now at a certain point, also, you can get cable, but if you don't have a certain streaming service, you still got to add the streaming service.
Right.
So the money that people are going to have to expend, if they are like hardcore sports fans, particularly of like what I would call a niche sport, is significant.
Oh, absolutely. It's in there now. We're in a very bad situation with it, as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
well, it's only going to grow. I don't see it. I don't see reductions in price.
If you're the type of sports fan, and there's a decent amount out there who are hardcore into one or two sports, you're okay. But if you're that sports fan who's into everything and you want to watch, you know, MLB and golf and soccer and hockey, you're screwed.
Right.
Yeah. Unless you decide to either A, pay, or B, pirate this stuff through. No, honestly, like pirate it through either like your password to your parents, or, you know, you go on whatever website that's going to send links around, which obviously I think a lot of 20 somethings and 30 somethings do.
I heard from a guy today who signed up for the Fubo free trial from 8 different emails. So he's gotten 8 weeks worth out of it. The thing is, people always dreamed of like an a la carte option on cable where you could just get the sports channels you want and get rid of, you know, Hallmark Channel or whatever it is you're not watching. Well, it's a la carte now, except it's separate streaming subscription fees every month. And it gets out of hand really fast if you're a fan of, you know, a lot of different sports, because they're in a lot of different places now, more than they've ever been.
It would be in an ideal world. What we need is for you to be able to pick what you want from cable. you know.
Right. Yeah, but they won't. Right. I don't. I agree with you. But
that's never going to happen. See that right. It's never going to. But I don't need 47 home shopping networks. Like, get those,
correct.
Get those immediately off of my television and just give me, you know, what I need. So, but you know, God forbid we ever get what we want.
Well, you're a sports fan, but right. You know, the non-sports fan would be like, why do I have to pay
but
all
that's
this
what
money
I'm
for ESPN?
Everybody should be able to pick.
Right.
What,
I agree. Yeah. Listen, I'm with 100%. I'm with you.
Yeah.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
All right, a couple more here and then I'll let you guys go. What did you Jimmy, what did you make of we've seen this now a couple times, high profile personalities, in this case Kirk Herbstreit, being public with criticism about Dan Orlovsky. Oh. I actually like
I can't tell you how much I love that story.
Well, you probably love it for the sort of the
content,
you know, so you can write about it. Yes. The page views. I actually like it because it feels transparent and honest to me. Now, I'm sure, you know, ESPN PR and ESPN right. executives were ticked off, but it is like it's. I feel like in a way it's good to see, because if Herbstreit thinks that like Orlovsky putting that out there sort of plays upon bullshit tropes and stereotypes, I'm glad for him to call it out. I do understand this probably, I guess the counter would be, you know, you're part of the same organization, you don't publicly call out your colleague, you do that behind the scenes, and I get that, and I understand that. I'm not one who's ever been like to be called out publicly on Twitter from colleagues, and it's happened, but I don't know. I appreciated Herbstreit's transparency. How did you see that?
A few things. Again, ties into Paul Pierce. Someone else at ESPN does that, they probably get a suspension. Kirk Herbstreit is not going to get any sort of discipline for that. And you know ESPN was not happy about it, because Kirk, Orlovsky, and ESPN were all quiet. There was not one word said about it. So that tells me that behind the scenes there was some shit going on. Number two, I think, listen, I had Marshan on my podcast and we discussed this. He had a really big problem with Herbstreit calling out Orlovsky. I don't really have a huge problem with the coworker calling out the coworker. I think what hurt Herbstreit here a little bit is he comes off looking like a little bit of an Ohio State. Like if Orlovsky's right. taken down Trevor Lawrence, I don't know if Kirk is going to go on Twitter and tear into
Kirk
Orlovsky.
Might, because his son's played well, there, but true. I know what
right.
you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I also think, listen, this is, you know, it's a tough thing to say, but I sort of feel like Orlovsky's a guy who, like, step away from Twitter for a few minutes every now and then. It wouldn't kill you. Right. Like, yeah.
As you know, Jimmy, a lot of times, you know, both yeah. Me and Jimmy talk about this a lot sort of offline. Like, Chad, so many times the explanation of you trying to explain what you did just kills you. It creates a second right. news cycle, and you're never going to win over the people who have already made their mind up. So you're just sort of perpetuating the cycle, where the reality is, especially on a place like Twitter, like literally, if you're the story, 8 hours from now, you're not the story.
Right.
If you just sort of hold on.
Put your head down.
Yeah. And what about you, Chad? How did you see
when you
that?
Make those apology ahead, videos, Jim. They're just so cringe. They're just so cringe.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I on the one hand, I empathize because, you know, nobody wants to be the story of the day on Twitter. We're all sort of trying to avoid that. I get it. But on the other hand, it never the explanation, like if you put that in quotes, it's like 99 out of 100.
But
it
this buries is also you where I mean, I think you and I may disagree on this a little bit, but this is where I get into, like, you know. Twitter is not real life. Like,
if
Dan Orlovsky just put his phone away for about 12 hours,
yes,
he didn't have to put his phone away. If he just didn't tap the Twitter app for 12 hours, it would all be gone and done with. But he's a guy who, you know, I guess, you know, his part of his whole gross word coming up brand is like tweeting and tweeting, tweeting and tweeting and tweeting. But like, sometimes you just got to like don't go on Twitter for 12 hours and your life will be a lot better. But
yeah, and again, listen, I as someone who's on that service way too much and puts way too much stock
into
it,
definitely
I'm not being
absolutely
a hypocrite here. Well, as you do, Jimmy. I'm not going to be a hypocrite.
Richard.
Listen, Jimmy.
All right, let's go. All right, go. I'll look something up.
Jimmy, your brand is the guy who says he's not right, so see online. Let's that's kind of your brand.
No, it's not.
So that's what you're kind of playing right now.
Let's see what we got here.
This is a work from you, Jimmy.
Oh, my God, on my phone. Go ahead. Bring up the next topic.
Jimmy, it's a podcast. You can't like go into your files or something like that sure, and tell Jim us to wait.
You're the host.
Chad,
just keep moving
he's
it
on
along.
Twitter.
You're the host. Move it along.
Chad, you got a take on this about the ESPN on ESPN crime?
I'm with Jimmy.
Well, crime isn't even the right word because I think Herb Street had every right to say what he said. It's the crime's a bad choice by me.
Well, I'm with Jimmy on. I thought about whether Herb Street would have done that if we're a Michigan quarterback coming into the league, but that's probably not fair to him because he's proven credible even with his allegiances for a long time now. I think Orlovsky's biggest mistake was generalizing. You can't do that anymore, especially
100%.
In matters of race in particular, but. You know, he basically said that scouts had told him questioned Fields' work ethic to him, and there were no specifics there. And you got to be specific. You got to have an example of him coming in late, coming in 2 hours before kickoff for a big game, or not staying to watch film when, you know, the coach, his position coach asked him to, or things like that. And especially nowadays, I Twitter is not real life, but it has real consequences sometimes, more now than ever.
Yeah.
I'm not a cancel culture believer, but there's consequence culture. And if you screw up and you screw up on Twitter and it's something everybody sees and people with authority over you see, it can have a significant effect on your career. Orlovsky is pretty fortunate that he's so well regarded at ESPN. Otherwise, he probably would have been facing a suspension, if not the probably not the full Paul Pierce punishment, but would have been off the air for a little while.
And keep in mind, those comments by Orlovsky came on the Pat McAfee show, which just was a whole
whole other subtext. Well, there's two things real quick on that. One, I feel like Orlovsky has to know better. He's a smart enough guy to understand the history, particularly when it comes to player draft picks of color who get the whole tag, like, you know, not doesn't have a motor, not a work ethic. It, you know, so much of that shit was like based in like racism. So
at
he's
that position
know
in particular, at quarterback,
right. he's got to know the history of that one to me. And then two, the other thing is, and I actually think this was good. I saw so many like college football types and experts, including even like my colleague Bruce Feldman, basically just sort of come out and say, like, here, I've covered the sport for this long, and here's like what these people are saying about Justin Fields. By the way, I don't know anything about Justin Fields. Like, I know what I see on the field. The guy looks like he's going to be a terrific quarterback. But it was cool to see like the people like within the sport sort of be like, hey, like, I've covered this guy, I've talked to this guy, I cover this program, and here's what they have to say.
Can I just put a bow on this
ahead,
real
Jim
quick? And don't edit this out.
Am I?
James Traina, 75,000 tweets. Richard Deitch, 206,000.
I don't delete my tweets.
I rest my case.
First of all, we don't know if you've deleted it. Secondly, I've been on, you know, Twitter since 2008 or whatever, 2009. Yeah, it's too many tweets. I would never disagree with you on that. Unquestionably, both of us should be in an institution.
It was you, Shaq, and Ashton Kutcher at the beginning.
Yeah, 75K is not a good number either.
I totally agree.
All right. Well, finally, we're in agreement.
It's an embarrassment. Yeah,
I also like, unlike you, I like to respond to people. You know, I say hi.
But that's my point. Sometimes you gotta.
It's a big mistake. Trust me, I'm with you.
You don't respond to people?
I try not to.
I would check myself.
Just to be clear, so I don't come off as a total asshole. I will respond to
too
people.
Late.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't respond to people usually when it comes to sports stuff because sports fans are certifiably insane, and like I'm not going to argue with someone about like DJ LeMahieu's
Yankees third inning.
DJ LeMahieu's war. But like if someone tweets me about like Curb Your Enthusiasm, then I will respond and have like some conversation.
All right, fair enough. Good to know. Yes. Yeah.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right, last, boy, this has been a very heavy ESPN show, but what are you going to do? Last one here. Chad, I'll start with you. Le'Veon and John Skipper got nearly $13 million in Series A funding, which I think, you know, I'm not a business expert, but obviously that's, you know, that's a nice chunk of change from some people who are making the investment. That would mean that they will be able to bring on some talent and create whatever they're going to create. What, you know, what do you make of Meadowlark Media? The flagship, of course, is going to be the Le'Veon audio show. I wouldn't call it a radio show, but the sort of the audio product. And they should be able to make money on that. I mean, we see the numbers and the dollars that a guy like Simmons can make with his individual podcast. But then the question after that is, what kind of talent can they attract? And, you know, is there a market for them to sort of do some of these projects and then sell some of these projects elsewhere?
I have to admit, I was a little surprised because he struck me as a guy who more wanted to hang out with his friends and have a good time and put together the kind of content they wanted to put together than being anybody with a really strong business sense to go forward with something like this. Simmons always, and I think that's probably the ideal for what Le'Veon has in mind, is the success that Simmons has had, you know, Meadowlark and Grantland and all the similarities, even with the naming. Simmons always had that in mind. He was always thinking forward to, you know, what the next area of content could be that would be profitable and successful. And, you know, there's probably a element of people right now that don't even know he was a writer that listened to his podcasts, and right. Maybe Le'Veon is in that shift. I guess probably Skipper's the one with more of the business sense, but I'm really curious to see, you know, what happens when some of the contracts come up with the people who are best associated with him at ESPN.
Yeah, like the Bomani Joneses and
Katie. Yeah. Maybe even Mina, although, you know,
Pablo Torre. Yeah.
Mina's as big a star probably as they have right now, but
I think she'll stay at Mina's obviously, Mina Kimes is obviously, you know, really for ESPN, sort of probably about as well liked a person sort of internally by the executives, and she's moved to football. Good for her. I mean, I think she'd probably, I mean, I, you know, I've never asked her this. My sense would be like, while she would love to work with the Le'Veon crew, I think she should try to milk as much money out of ESPN as long as she can.
I think it's a little too narrow for where she is right now, you know, she's made everything she's been on there better.
But Jimmy, let me ask you this, because this is kind of interesting to me with the Meadowlark, and this is a little bit of your world. One of the things that has been a driver in some of these new companies, and you know, the SPACs are always trying to go to get involved in this, is gambling, is sports gambling. It doesn't look like Meadowlark Media is going to head into that area. And so, you know, the one place where it seems like everybody thinks that they can eventually cash out on a gold rush is via some kind of gambling connection, even if the gambling connection is lame. How do you see Meadowlark Media? Are you interested in it? And two, you know, what's your sense with just all these places that are seemingly interested in any kind of gambling content? We just saw VSIN sell for big money. You know, Barstool obviously did their deal with Penn National. You know, at the moment, it seems like that's where the gold rush is. I'm sure the gold rush will end. That's where it seems like the rush is right now.
Well, I know that one of your pet peeves is when people say the media.
I don't like that.
Yeah, and that's sort of what the gambling thing is for me. I don't think gambling content in terms of like, experts and picks and what to bet, I don't think that stuff's resonating at all. I think where Meadowlark can make money and any sports media company can make money is, I'd be curious to hear what Chad says about the radio stations there, EEI and Sports Hub. WFAN here in New York is 24 hours of gambling advertisements. I mean, every single commercial on WFAN is for some sort of book and anything that has, you know, daily fantasy, this, that, and the other thing. That's where people can make money. I mean, that's where the, so I think Metalark, I mean, I think it would be foolish to just, you know, say, oh,
but that, but that's who will sponsor podcasts for sure. Right.
Right. Right. Of course. And you know, this, like you mentioned, Vissen, there's partnerships you could do. So I think I could see, you know, I would assume Metalark's going to go in that direction more than having like a column from someone saying like, here are my four baseball bets for tonight, which nobody cares about.
So Chad, that's interesting with Jimmy. So Jimmy just brought up something, and I think he's actually, I can't believe it, Jimmy. It's painful for me to say, but I think he's dead on here, is that the gambling, the DraftKings or whatever, if you have an interest in that world, you don't necessarily have to sponsor, like, you know, here's my analysis of these games and here I would pick. It's, you just want to be connected to sports content in a sense. You know, I think that's probably, not that I want to mention him on this podcast, but I guess I will. Like, the Action Network brought Rovell in, not because he's like some kind of great handicapper, right? But he brought 2 million followers, if, you know, all our Twitter numbers are a little off. But you know what I'm saying. So I guess if you're these companies, Chad, you're, you know, you're trying to just find an audience, right, to push your product, not necessarily finding the product that is going to be heavy into sports gambling.
Yeah, I mean, up here, it's infiltrated everything. There are clearly paid shows on the weekends in the morning that are strictly gambling oriented. There's a sports host on WEI up here at night who's always been very gambling centric anyway, but he's got the, clearly has a go ahead to talk more and more about that. And I personally, I mean, I'm not a gambler. I would be if my wife would give me some money to do it, but I'm not, and I find it unlistenable. It just, I don't care what you think about the point spread on the Patriots Colts game Sunday. I just, how do I know how much money you're making? It has to, how do I know what your record is? And it's, to me, it's more, it gets me to turn the radio off quicker than, you know, normal sports radio, fire Belichick, fire Danny Ainge, all of that stuff normally would. And I don't know how sustainable it is in terms of content. I think obviously it's bringing money in the, you know, in the windows as a resource for financial gain that they didn't have before, other than, you know, all the ED ads and Fox News ads we also get up here.
Yeah, so Jimmy, so I want to ask you this, because you're obviously the biggest gambler between me, Chad, and you. I actually find, like, what David Payne Purdom does, he's the guy who basically covers sports gambling for ESPN, like, fascinating. Like, I love that stuff. It's so interesting to me, like, how the people come up with the odds on a certain game, like what, like, the smart marks or the, you know, the money crowd is betting on. Like, I think that's really interesting. I'm with Chad. I, like, unless it's like a personality I really like, I don't need somebody to go through an entire NFL sheet and tell me who they're betting on. But, like, I personally think that's interesting. Like, I think that content is interesting, even though I'm not a big gambler. But you are the one guy who I know bets. So, like, is there a market for this, or is the market already existing and you're just catering to the people who are already betting?
First of all, my under 8 in the Marlins Braves game right now is not looking good. 3-2 Marlins in the fifth. So yeah,
a lot of time though.
No, I like all that. I'm with you. I like a pick segment if the people doing it are entertaining. Like Mike and the Man, you remember this, Richard? Mike,
they were very good at that.
Yeah. Well, that's Friday, a gold standard. Yeah,
right. Friday's 5 o'clock. You know, Simmons does his thing where he guesses the lines. That stuff is fine, but like Chad said, just a guy breaking down his picks. No one is interested in that. But the business, like you said, Richard, the business of it is pretty interesting.
I find it really interesting.
Yeah, I'm not into, like, when, you know, they do the, like, oh, a better just place $5 billion on it. Like, that I don't care about. But in terms of, you know, I'm fascinated by the fact that with the legalized gambling in states, Jersey is making more money than any other state.
Vegas, totally.
Crazy.
Totally fascinating to me.
Yeah.
I love that guy. That he's been on our radio show in Toronto. I think that guy is such an asset to ESPN.
Yeah.
Probably an undervalued asset, to be honest. But yeah, I think that stuff is really interesting. I will say this, though.
And let me just say this,
go
too.
Go.
I mean, and again, it's what Van Pelt does with Bad Beats, even if you don't gamble,
is great.
It's so entertaining.
I agree.
You know, so really. It's you still have to have the person driving the content to make it entertaining.
Yeah, the one thing that I think, Chad, is very clear is that there are going to be people who cash out on this, like whose companies are bought because of this. I think there'll be people who make some good money because their podcasts and other stuffs are sponsored. And then I think like the rush is going to end. So if you can get in on it now or whatever, like I think you can make a mint, but that will end. And I liken it in a weird way to when Simmons sold his business to Spotify, like, you know, the time, it's not his plea and plan this, but the timing of it was like a month before the pandemic or something,
yeah,
like that,
right.
2 months.
Right.
Like that deal would never have happened after that, I don't think. So I think if you can, you know, if you're a company now that like has this kind of content, you know, you probably should try to sell as fast as possible, because I do wonder in 2 years from now if there's still going to be this gold rush for it. But maybe there will be. I mean, maybe if, like, I don't know, your traditional NFL or NBA game, we start seeing more gambling content or lines on the game. Maybe,
well,
that brings more people in.
It's only going to get bigger because, right, there are, you know, less than half the states have it legalized.
Correct.
Right,
yeah,
now.
I know.
So. Yeah,
I know.
It's going to get super saturated. Like, it's kind of like podcasts themselves, where if you've had one for a while and you built up your audience over time, you're probably in a great
shape.
Spot.
But if you start new,
don't even bother right now.
Trust me, I know. Listen, Chad, I have the Sports Illustrated Media podcast, and I had to start a whole goddamn new audience.
That wasn't deliberate. I'm sorry, Jim.
Help build that thing up so Trainer can get rich.
And now you won't come on.
That's true. Man's got to have principles. All right. So, well, I will say one last thing on this, just it's my own entertainment. You know, Jimmy, that Canada does not have sports gambling yet, but there's a lot of bills in federal government for this to happen. So this, to Chad's point, like if and when this happens, and I imagine it will, there'll be a gold rush up here. So I guess there are still a lot of markets where like there's a lot of money to be flooded. It does make me think, you know, like should every website, you know, whether it's The Athletic, The Boston Globe, Sports Illustrated, like should we all have some gambling section, or does that just become nothing more than, you know, everybody's just trying to grab some money and 3 years from now it's, you know, it goes away?
Yeah, from what I understand, we're trying to figure out a way to do that. You know, we've done the standard thing, which is run a football picks column on Sunday forever, you know, but I think you're wise to figure out a way to maximize it, but you better do it pretty fast.
It's not going away. It's, I know. So, and what's going to be a big driver in all this is, you know, Goodell sort of opened it up a little bit that the NFL may be, you know, coming into the 21st century here with all this. So if the NFL starts acknowledging all of this, there's no turning back. It's full steam ahead.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know what? Maybe I'm undervaluing it. Maybe I think it's a gold rush that not necessarily is going to end, but it feels like a housing market bubble. But I don't know. You know what? I see these prices on NFTs, and I'm like, have I lost my mind? And maybe that's the beginning of a.
Yeah, I still don't know what that is. So
I kind of understand it, and like it's sort of I understand sort of it's very similar to art in sort of owning a unique thing, but it is some of the
feels very easily manipulated.
Like, well, not just that, Chad. Like the initial numbers on it are just like fantasy land. You know, I remember, Jimmy, I don't think you were working at Sports Illustrated then, but there was a time when Tiger, the people thought that the Sports Illustrated for Kids had the first Tiger Woods rookie card. Like SI for Kids way back in the 90s had like trading cards that they put in the middle of the magazine, and they had Tiger when he just started. And like there was a time when like I remember somebody bid like somebody like sold it for $500,000, like an insane amount of money. And now today, you know, maybe it's worth $1,000 or something at 500. So, you know, you wonder if like we're at the beginning of the market and people are just sort of losing their mind because it's the beginning and will it head up? But I don't know. It's all interesting. Is there anything else, guys, you want to cover before I let you go? You've granted me over 50 minutes of your time, and I appreciate it.
I just got 206,000 tweets to 75,000.
Right, you got that in. I'm sure.
I will say this.
Your buddies at Sports Illustrated, former and current, will be happy about that shot.
I'll say this. I was very surprised yesterday on Wednesday when I went to Twitter and I asked people for their favorite sports quote of all time. And you gave me a great one from, of course, the legendary Dusty Rhodes. But I was shocked you didn't go Roddy Piper. What was the mindset there?
You know, I mean, the Piper one, you certainly would have to consider, like, you don't throw rocks at a man with a machine gun, right?
My favorite
you
Piper.
You say I'm insane. You call me insane or whatever it is. I say thank you very much. I think Dusty's promo for Starrcade is probably the greatest promo of all time. I know that's an easy answer, but as great as The Rock is, as great as Stone Cold is, and Flair had his, but don't you think, Jimmy, if something that sort of symbolizes everything about professional wrestling, a professional wrestling promo that sort of brings you into real life and then back into wrestling, it's that promo? That's what
I mean, listen, it's a great promo. I'd have to sit here and think about, like, where it ranks.
The great promos of all time. Like, you know, a lot of people like the CM Punk promo when he's sitting on the ground with Cena and they fake cut the mic.
I know you just had him on this podcast, but my favorite probably was the Heyman one with Vince.
Oh, when he said the ECW one, you destroyed ECW?
Yeah, and he brings up Vince's dad. And
yeah, that's like a six-minute promo. That's amazing. Right. That's just a different – but I feel as great – and listen, you know I love Heyman. I mean, if he's listening to this, which I'm sure he's not, shout out to you, Paul. But, Jimmy, I feel like that's almost a storyline promo more than a straight promo.
Fair. That's fair.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No,
like, he's ad-libbing that. But, yes, I mean, in terms of
– oh, there's that great
– that's the greatest promo ever put on Vince McMahon, unquestionably.
Right.
Chad, you don't follow any of this stuff, right? So this is
just trying to figure out how many times I've tweeted, and I can tell you it's zero times about wrestling.
Yeah, I will say this, by the way, I know people don't like it when I talk about wrestling. It's becoming like Trainers podcast. But next year, the WrestleMania 30, what is it, 38? It's in Dallas. They actually, I feel like, might have a shot. Knock on wood. Let's hope COVID is, if it's not over, at least we sort of have some normalcy again. They could get 100,000 both nights, Jimmy.
I don't even think it's a question. I think they absolutely will.
But that's a lot of tickets.
There's no,
like, I'm saying it's not a guarantee. I'm saying it's a possibility.
Well, I'm saying it's a guarantee. There is.
You have to then bring back Rock, Becky.
Well, that first,
you have to. Everybody's got to. Cena. Every star has got to be there to do two nights.
The main event of that WrestleMania is going to be The Rock against Roman Reigns.
I agree.
And they will do 100,000 because there is nobody. That does marketing better than WWE. They will.
I will say this, Jimmy. It pains me to do this, but you have a very good rapport with Roman Reigns. I've enjoyed when he's been on the podcast.
I appreciate that.
He clearly likes you, and I feel like he gives you a little. You feel he gives you a little bit more than almost anybody else? I feel like it's with Heyman and me. I feel like Heyman's willing to drop kayfabe with me. I feel like Roman's willing to do that with you.
Well, it was Roman who said to me when I had him on the last time where I'd asked him about main eventing WrestleMania with The Rock, and he didn't want to come out and directly say it, but he said it in a roundabout way, which was easy to figure out. Like, we're not going to do it this year in the middle of COVID when we're only going to have half of
25,000,
right? When the next year is basically Jerry World with 100,000. So I was like, that makes sense, you know, talk that it would happen this year.
I hope you bring him back on. You guys, he's good with you. I'd love to have him on. I find him to be, I think he's a good guy. And he's a great performer.
I like him because he's a great guy. He's a great guy. Yeah.
Seems like a good guy. All right, Chad, anything you want to promote before we get out of here, speaking of wrestling?
No, I have a piece coming up on Wide World of Sports and appealing to our over 70 demo, I guess, that remembers Jim McKay. But
love that.
That'll be out pretty soon.
What's next, Chad? Bowling for Dollars feature?
That's a great idea, actually. I'm full-time on the nostalgia beat around here.
Call Vern Lundquist up. He'll give you some good stories about Buffy.
I felt like in the beginning of the pandemic, I was all about that. The nostalgia. I wanted to watch the baseball bunch with Johnny Bench. I wanted bring back all the old stuff. That was me at the beginning of the pandemic.
If you remember the pandemic, they were showing a lot of old games, which was kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
But there was a certain point I was watching German Bundesliga. I was just so happy to get anything live. So
Korean baseball.
Yeah, Korean baseball, exactly. All right, Jimmy Train, of course, is he's the host of the Sports Media Podcast.
Illustrated.
Wait a minute, no, he's not. Jimmy Train is the host of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Chad Finn is a sports media writer for the Boston Globe. We'll leave that in too, Jimmy. I'm not going to edit that out. Jimmy, Chad, thank you very much for giving me your time. Continued success. Best of health. Thank you for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, guys.
Take care, Chad.
All right. Back in the studio. My thanks to Jimmy and Chad for an interesting sports media discussion. If you like these kind of podcasts, and I hope you do, if you've... gotten to this part of the podcast, you likely do, head back to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch archives, and hopefully you'll see something you like. Previous podcast before this was Paul Heyman going behind the scenes on WrestleMania and the WWE. A lot of people seem to like that. Prior to that, NFL Network reporter Stacey Dales and ESPN MLB reporter Marley Rivera. And prior to that, James Andrew Miller and Anthony Krupe on the NFL's new media deal. So a lot of the stuff, I feel like, if you're into media, still holds up. So head back to the archives. If you like it, please give us a 5-star review and a nice note. That's how this podcast remains. It does have certainly value for the podcast company I am working with. Thanks, as always, to Patrick. Thanks to Bob for putting this together. Thanks to everybody who continues to listen and to continues to support this podcast as we're heading towards episode 150 after the long run at Sports Illustrated. Once again, thank you very much, and we'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.